Welcome to Day Zero Update for September 24th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkin.
And I'm Jenner Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a bunch of news this week as TGS happened. A decent amount of stuff got dates. A couple things from that Xbox TGS showcase. Not really much there, but a few interesting bits as well as... let's see. We got Unity. We got updates on that. One good thing and updates that I would say did not happen in the time frame they promised. They said a couple of days, and that meant Friday, almost a week later, which is not the case. But also that FTC case is still going on with the Microsoft acquisition, and that sure led to a bunch of documents getting out that probably should not have been. We got some information on things that are probably not 100% accurate on what they're planning, but probably close enough that we got some ideas of maybe a new Xbox Series X version coming up, maybe a new controller, and some other things there. So we'll get to that stuff later on. But before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll start off here with The First Descendant. This is an upcoming free-to-play game coming out of, I think it's Nexon. This is in an open beta for this weekend. So I played a bit of this, played it for stream, and enjoyed it a good bit. It's basically Warframe meets Destiny in a lot of its ways. So Warframe, in that you, when you start, you get to pick one of three descendants. And then sort of once you get out of the starting stuff, you can find a menu eventually that shows like, oh, there's like a dozen here that you can eventually unlock. So those are kind of like the Warframes of them having different abilities and such. Though, you know, your main thing is shooting dudes. And sort of in the way that, you know, Destiny has sort of classes of guns. That's a thing here where you probably start off with an assault rifle and a shotgun and some other stuff. Though they're not doing Diablo-style weapon drops or anything. As far as I've seen, you may have different... I don't know if there's rarity to it so much. Maybe at some point, but a lot of it's just like, oh, I got... you know, a level 5 version of this gun, and it's like, okay, I should replace my level 3 version with that, because, you know, it's going to have better DPS to it and all that. So that kind of stuff. You do get, I forget what they call them, they're like little chips that add bonus stats to your weapons, and you have one for yourself. That's a very Warframe mechanic to it, especially in the sense that it has certain ones that are like, oh, you can only have one of these on your on yourself for at once, that kind of stuff. And you also have a limitation for how many you could have at once equipped. It'll tell you, like, you could have 27 points worth of these, and then you might get one that's 20, and you're like, oh, shit, that one's pretty good. Might be worth sacrificing, you know, having a few others extra on there, that kind of stuff. So... that kind of stuff you have. You have some side equipment stuff that boosts other stats. And that's where you might get more Diablo-ish kind of randomized loot that might have extra bonus stats to them based on the rarity, that kind of stuff. And had a couple of things that are like, oh, if you equip this and then have, you know, a shotgun in your arsenal, you'll get, you know, extra bonus stats versus just, you know, nothing bonus if you don't do it. So I was like, all right, it's not too painful to do that kind of stuff, because all the weapons are pretty useful. It's probably more of a feel, like what kind of weapons you like, whether you want some longer range stuff, shorter range stuff, that kind of stuff. But yeah, your character, it is a third person shooter, much like Warframe. So it's pretty well done for getting around places. It takes a little bit to get used to it, but you have a double jump. You also have a grappling hook to kind of pull you up to areas or across gaps or whatever, but you can also jump pretty well to get around So kind of lets you explore areas pretty easily and kind of get up in some of these more closely designed areas that makes it pretty easy to get around. And yeah, you have a home base called Albion. I think sort of like the home place in Fable. Mm. Albion, I think, is the world in Fable, I think. But that's where, you know, you run into your different vendors that are doing different things. You got a message box because it's a free-to-play game. They're doing special bonuses for jumping in this weekend for each day. So I don't know what all translates to the final game or not. But they do have some special stuff just for, like, playing the game, getting to level 20, which I played for, like, 2 hours and got to level 7. So I don't think it's that hard of a time to get up to level 20. So, but yeah, like the neat thing is sort of, instead of like going on story missions, you kind of have Destiny 2's kind of open world structure of going to these areas that you'll see a couple mission markers around. You go do those things, because early on it's just like, do 100% of the missions here, and you just go to each one and they tells you like, oh, this will take less than 5 minutes, you know. Other people that are around can join in if they want and help you out. So kind of party up that way. So that's pretty nice. And then, yeah, usually once you get all those done, it's like, all right, you need to go to the next area kind of thing. And that's where that opens up some more stuff. And that's where I started getting to the more difficult missions. Not so much in terms of dying. The only time I really died is when the game crashed one time, which it's a beta. So I wasn't too surprised it had some issues like that, but for the most part it ran well, looks pretty good. And when I did one of the missions, a bunch of people joined in, and basically it was super easy at that point. They do have some bigger, more co-op oriented content in there. I didn't try any of that, but they do have like harder stuff in there for people that want that. But you're kind of paying attention to your loot, going into it every once in a while to double check things, see if you got better weapons. You can sell dupes if you want, or you can break them down into materials that you'll eventually find some merchant that lets you turn into other things or upgrade weapons. I think I upgraded my mastery level, which is another level thing. I use that to upgrade my inventory, and you can tell the sort of game that this is when it upgraded it from 75 items to 76. So not like a major jump or anything. It's just like, oh, you can hold slightly more. And so it's like, oh, they're playing on you, not, you know, getting getting too big on that stuff where you just never have to check your inventory really. So they're going to make you work for every little bonus thing you get. So, but that seems neat. Little game. The story is like, it's the future. Humans have been destroyed by the Vulgus, as they call them. These weird monster creatures. And then the descendants kind of show up as like powerful humans that can fight back, though they just fight with guns. So I don't know how powerful they actually are, but, the three you start off with have different special abilities. The one I picked was the woman who has like ice spell stuff that she can do. That's pretty neat. Though the downside is that most of her outfits have boob windows on them and, you know, very tight pants to show off her butt, that kind of stuff. It's like, oh yeah, this is a game from, I think, South Korea. That kind of design to it. So I found, I think one of the outfits I got for logging in gave her an outfit that didn't have any of that. So I was like, all right, this is a good start. But I only had one like special color. So I just made all the parts of it with that one color. So they even make you unlock specific colors for your customizing your stuff. So it's definitely one of those kind of games, but I'll probably keep an eye on this when it comes out, maybe later this year. I don't know that I could find a specific date for it just yet, but that's the first Descendant. Let's see. Also been playing some more Starfield, dealing with an issue of stealing my first ship, but it being a much worse ship than the one I started with. So I need to figure out a way to drop off some contraband somewhere. I think I'm just going to go back to my house and just literally drop it on the floor and leave. And then go back and swap out my ship to the one I want that has plenty of inventory space versus one where I have to deal with a bunch of bullshit before I can do anything, really. So, yeah, that's Starfield. It's still just kind of a thing I dip into here and there. And the other game I got from Gamefly, Armored Core 6, because I wanted to try that out. And shortly before the podcast here, I was trying to figure out if I hated the game or not. Because they throw you through a quick tutorial, just like how to do movement stuff and some of your weapon stuff. It doesn't really teach you that much to it. It just literally tells you what buttons do things. And then no real other concepts. So I had to use guides because the boss at the end of this first mission is a helicopter that just wrecks you if you do not know what you're doing. And that feels like maybe a harsher start of a game than From has had in a while. Because usually their Souls games are not too bad on that stuff. They have a boss that will usually wreck you with like one or two hits, but you also start off at a bonfire and get the chance to build up to beat it again.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. The closest it does that is it checkpoints you before you do the thing that spawns the boss. So you have to sit through like 30 seconds extra stuff for that. But it does refill your Estus flasks, essentially. You have health kits for your mech, but the mech that you start with has like a gun to shoot stuff, but it only shoots for like a little bit. The other problem is there's meters and UI stuff going on that I have not parsed what any of it means.
Yeah, that's the thing about Armored Core games is they're much more about on the technical side of everything, making sure that you've got all the equipment that you need going up against a certain level. That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, so I figure out like one probably relates to that gun, but there's so much going on, I have no reason to pay attention to it. There's a missile shooter that can shoot every so often, but I have no clue when it's ready for another shot.
Yeah.
So I hit the button a bunch to see like, oh, can I shoot more? It's like nothing comes out. I'm like, okay, not yet then. And this boss, like it seems like the big thing is you want to, instead of your typical kind of From Software thing of like turtling or whatever, this boss is designed to not let you do that.
Yeah,
because it has heat-seeking missiles that'll literally just go around buildings you're hiding behind, kind of stuff. And it's like, all right, this is a fucker.
Yeah, this is it's that type of game. You got to roll, Yeah,
well, there's no roll. Kind of there is. It's a
dash or whatever.
Yeah, it's a dash that also uses up your energy meter, and so I was like looking at guides, and it's like
That's a Souls game, all right.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, you gotta go flying, and I'm like, I can only fly for a little bit, because if I'm trying to, and the big thing for this boss is you need to use the sword melee weapon, which you can only do like two slashes every so often, and so it's like, okay, you try to essentially get up against it, and the slash will pull you towards it, but the boss loves to go out of bounds. And you'll see big walls with, red text on it, be like, no, you can't go here. The boss can, but you can't. So fuck off. And the boss has a really good time stunning you, making you sort of run out of your energy meter to, be able to move around quickly. And so you kind of really got to pay attention to like when it's shooting missiles at you to try to dodge that stuff, and then probably have to land to refill your meter to go back up and fly and maybe see if you can do some sword strikes to do it, because there's a stagger that, you know, again, this is stuff the game does not tell you. And it's like, reading guys like, oh, staggering's the best thing. Like, I don't even know how to do that. And it's like, oh, you basically just have to, like, kind of get it perfect area where it stopped moving, and you kind of do the sword strikes and maybe some other stuff at it at the same time, and you do enough damage at once, it sort of staggers for a bit. But then you're out of, you know, sword juice, and so you gotta hope you got missiles or something else to shoot for a bit. And yeah, it's like a game where eventually you get money in a storefront to buy, you know, new parts and weapons and such to build out a more robust armored core. But what you get to start with is a very basic, and the game doesn't do a great job of telling you really how to play it properly, which I feel like Souls games have gotten much better at that stuff. With that, and I mean, I forgot one more game, Lies of P. I played that on Game Pass, which is the Pinocchio Souls-like. With a bit of flavor of Bloodborne. It's like a spooky kind of game. And it's really good. I'm liking it so far. And much like Bloodborne, it's not really trying to allow you to really grind or turtle as much as you
would like to. More like Bloodborne, it rewards aggressiveness. You don't want to try and defend your, you know, constantly defend yourself, because that's not how the enemies react in this game.
They do things like, if you do damage to enemies, they lose a chunk of their bar, but you also see like a shadow on their bar of like a lot of the damage you did. And if you don't go back to continue attacking them, they'll regain health, a chunk of their health. So there's incentives like that to, like, okay, you got to keep on them, or, you know, or live with them regaining some of their health, you know, whatever works for you. But the bonfires only have so many upgrades it allows for you to do. So once that, you can, you know, go back and, you know, refill your health with it, maybe store items in it. But otherwise you can't do upgrades with it. But where I'm at, you know, once you get past the first boss, you kind of run into a big home base area, a hotel, that you can do your upgrades there with a specific person, which is a very Souls-like thing to do. And so that's kind of a thing, but you can also warp between them. So if you're really intent on finding one that you can save at, you can kind of warp around for one that probably lets you. I haven't really done any of that stuff, so. But yeah, it's got good creepy vibes, because you got the puppets hanging around doing their thing, and they're kind of very mannequin-esque. Which gets to be pretty creepy at times. So yeah, it's a good game, good times. Definitely just does not try to let you really grind up in a way that Souls games. People have been able to, you know, exploit Souls games before. I'm just like, oh, just this, you know, this one enemy type, you know, drops a lot of souls, so I'm just going to keep farming this for a while and get a bunch of, you know, damage upgrades, that kind of stuff. This doesn't allow that as much, as you'll just get less each time you kill those enemies. They don't remove them like some Souls games have. So it has a lot of cool stuff there. So yeah, I'm looking forward to put one more time into that. So that's been pretty much all for me. So Brandon, what have you been doing?
First and foremost, I am still playing Baldur's Gate 3. I've gotten, I am, much like last week, I'm now in the, still in Baldur's Gate itself. I'm firmly in Act 3. I'm trying to bring resolution to all of the, you know, companion quests that I have. All of which are they're not easy, definitely, and a lot of them are very the choices that you can make in these are very perilous, to say the least. I recently finished Asterion's storyline with we found Cazador, who was the guy who turned him into a vampire spawn in the first place. And originally, when I was going to fight him, I had Asterion in my party to do it. But the problem with that is that Asterion, because he is still technically a thrall to Cazador, means that he can basically be controlled and contained by Cazador. So immediately before the battle starts, Cazador uses his powers to trap Asterion into a area where he's draining other thralls for this weird ritual he's trying to pull off. And if you don't kill him in 3 turns, then Asterion dies, and that's the end of him in that game. You cannot even bring him back the unusual way that happens when characters die for good in this game. So instead, what I just did is I just left Asterion back at my camp and got some different people to come in with my party and began this fight, not even starting the dialogue, just immediately attacking him. And that helped. It helped a great deal. The only problem is he has this one ability where he turns into like red mist. And not only does it, you know, let him, you know, navigate bigger parts of the map, it also means that because he's technically just mist, it's harder to hit him. You can still hit him. And when you do hit him, and especially if you're carrying like an item that's blessed by daylight, it'll pack a real punch, but it's still kind of a 50-50 crapshoot either way. At least it was until the recent update, where if you hit him with something daylight-related, he'll be forced to return to his original form. But that was after I had finished that fight. So now I'm trying to deal with a story involving... who is it? Dame Aelin, who is the... I won't spoil her story, but she's an integral part of the overall plot. But there's a infamous magician who's trying to capture her and use her power to basically bottle and sell immortality to his customers. And so when you tell her about her, she is, as you can guess, kind of pissed off. And so she decides to go off and try and get him. So the next time you see him, she's there getting ready to lay the smackdown on him, which then starts a fight. And as it turns out, he himself he's midway powerful. His actual like life bar isn't terribly difficult, but he has magic attacks that are like spreadable. So if your party is like all clumped up into a single area, it'll hurt all of the people nearby. The other problem is that he summons some elementals, and those are the real meat of the fight, because every single one of them has like their own strengths and weaknesses, and every one of them is like up to like 200, like from 150 to like 200 hit points. So they're difficult to take down. Now, Aelin herself is actually a big help here because of her nature as a angelic being. She can cast a blessed spell that will allow her to use holy damage to take stuff out. And she also can attack twice, and her attacks, when they connect, usually hit like 3 times. So, you know, it's that. But it's still an incredibly difficult fight. So I decided to just go back and hold that off for now. Right now I'm trying to find Will's father, because he managed to get out of his contract with the demon Mizora, and Mizora is essentially traded a life for a life, where he is now free from her, but his father's life is basically forfeit. But as it turns out, you can find him and save him before he dies. It's just a question of where he is. Also, last bit of update. And as Chris can attest to this, because he's played the game a bit too, every so often you're going to have to go back to camp to sort of rest and recuperate, and a lot of times also further certain plot lines and conversations with the party. And also there's like some essential services there that you can do, like revive dead party members or summon some assistants, or, you know, just hang out with people. And you can rest there, but in order to like fully rest, you have to have camp supplies, which can be either thing from like camp supplies as like an actual item, that's what it's called, or with a bunch of food and drinks that you can get a hold of. And You can use those to refill your resting meter. If you're not able to do that, you only get half rest, where you get half of your hit points back, and none of your like spell slots or anything are refilled. But otherwise, you can, if you do succeed, then you know, you come back, you're perfectly good, all that stuff. Well, in Baldur's Gate, it's actually possible to convince this guy who owns this tavern and inn that you can either pay him or you can convince him to give it to you for free, give you this bunch of suites that are located at the top floor. And if you do that, then you no longer have to go back to any particular camp. You can now stay up there indefinitely, at least until the game ends. And furthermore, there's a dumbwaiter there, but when you're getting ready to rest for the night, you can just buy supplies from them for like 40 gold. So, yeah, it's like not an issue anymore. Also, it's just better surroundings in general, because you get to actually like have a bed for once. But yeah, that's what I've been doing as far as like playing. I've also started playing Cyberpunk 2077 again, mostly because I wanted to see how the game has changed with the 2.0 update that released this week. Or was it last week? I don't remember if it was this week or last week. It was one of those. But the game's changes are pretty much immediate. There are like some definite like graphics changes that you can tell, and some improvements that are definitely there. A bunch of like NPCs react differently. The cops are actually not just stuck around like crime scenes. They're all over the place, and they will react if you do something illegal. Even if they're like at a crime scene, they will still come running for you. They've also basically completely gutted and redid the advancement mechanics in this game. When you start up, you basically have to redo all of your cyberware points and gear. And they've basically like completely changed the skill tree. They've also added some additional stuff. They've changed the look of some weapons. They've added some new character animations. There's some new thing, you know, stuff that's a lot closer to like what the game's original presentation was. Would I say it completely changes the game? I wouldn't go that far. It's still very much the same game at its core, but the interface is a lot more streamlined and easy to navigate and use. And just in general, stuff just looks better, you know. But yeah, I'm also planning on getting Phantom Liberty this week when it comes out on Tuesday. Because I'm interested in them expanding the lore a bit. So, if those who don't know, in that particular expansion, basically the president and the handler of the president of the new United States is Crashlands in the middle of Dogtown, which is a district of Night City that was originally closed off. It's 100% straight out of like, you know, Escape from Manhattan. Escape from New York, the, you know, the movie. But I know enough about the world's lore to know that the president of the new United States cannot be trusted, because the new United States is basically a dictatorship that's attached at the hip to Militech. So, yeah. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. So, Dan Ram, what about you?
Yeah. I mean, ever since I've gotten back from PAX, it's been a really rough month for me, so I've only been playing one game, which I'll talk about in a bit. But as for what's been going on with me, I'll just go ahead and quickly go over it. When I got back, the day after, I went to the gym, which I normally do. Then on my way home, my car broke down on me. And then I found out the damages were so much that it cost more than what I actually bought the car for. So yeah, I say goodbye. I ended up getting pick and pulled for $356. To add insult to injury, my brother also had to get rid of his car, and his car was the car that I've been driving for over 10 years, and he was able to get it pick and pulled for $1,500, and the reason being his actually like can be turned on. So yeah, that's been rough. So I've been playing the game of looking for a new car, and it's not a fun one. You know, the market that great. At the same time, I've been in the market for a new car for a while, and I've just been waiting. But, you know, I've been waiting too long, and now it is what it is now. But, yeah, so that's been a little rough. So that's definitely affected my gaming time, because instead of, you know, driving to certain places, I've been getting lifts. And, you know, that's pretty penny, especially living here in the Bay Area. So it's been a rather rough time for me. Anyway, back to
the game. Yeah, I know it sucks being being without, you know, a car in that part of California can suck. Yeah.
So. Being without any form of reliable transportation. We've been borrowing my mom's car, and like, it would also be like, like the things like seeing my girlfriend, things like that. Yeah, it hasn't been easy, but it is what it is, hanging in there. I can afford one. It's just a matter of like finding a good deal and not being, you know, not being taken advantage of. But yeah. So yeah, that's what's been up with me. Aside from that, the game that I have been playing is The Legend of Nyota Boundless Trails. It's sort of a spin-off of the Trails games. Like, it's rumored to have taken place in the same universe, but ages and eons before what happened in Trails in the Sky. So far playing it, I have not noticed anything as far as, like, similarities to the world, except for the main character's last name being Herschel. And, you know, Towa Herschel was a very popular character from the Trails of Cold Steel series. So, and in her chronology, her like great grandfather or something was an astronomer, and this guy like has this telescope. So it's you know, maybe it's him, maybe it's not. There's been some analysis with the latest game in Trails into Reverie, but you know, until Falcom goes ahead and says something, you know, we won't know. But as far as how the game plays, first of all, just to give you a bit more history on the game, it's actually a PSP game, and then eventually it got ported over to the PC, and we finally have a Western translation. Is it one that we actually needed? We don't know yet, because we don't know if it's actually connected to anything, but so far it's definitely been fun. I just don't know if it's a game that's for me. Like, typically with all of Falcom's releases, I've, you know, beaten them within 2 weeks, and like, despite my problems at home, like, there hasn't been enough to. And it's not because it's bad or anything. It's just that it just feels dated. One of my annoyances is the fact that the overall look of the game doesn't really match the art. So you're going to run into various characters and have conversations with them, and then when it shows like the actual drawn art for the character as they're having a conversation, it hardly even matches like the actual character model. And I know that it's a product of it being at the times of the PSP, but that's the, but aside from that, it plays very much like the Zwei games or East, where it's really just an action-based battle system, with the main difference being that it's a level-based game. So there isn't a whole lot as far as like exploration. This is not an open-world game. Everything is level-based. And in addition to the various levels you'll find on the world map, you can just go back home to your world, and it's a pretty sizable island. You can do things like side quests that you'd find in the Trails game. Sometimes there's even secret side quests as well. And yeah, but the level design is actually really, really nice for what it is. There's a bunch of items scattered out to lead you down the right path, and nothing is actually procedurally generated. They're all like well thought out maps. Like for me, it's not typically what makes me, you know, go crazy over anything. The battle system is actually pretty intuitive. There's a bit of platforming there. It's your typical hack and slash kind of thing with some magic here and there. I do have issues with the button layout. I haven't really done any digging to see if I could really change that up. But basically, you know, you move around with the control stick. What's it called? On the Switch, the A button attacks, the B button jumps, and then the X button dodges. And I don't know. For me, it's a little chaotic to the point where I still make mistakes here and there. You can use the right shoulder button to use some of the or change some of the what's it called? The magic that there is in the game. And yeah. So I'm about 5 hours into the game. I've heard that the game is really about 25 hours long. It can be as long as 60 if you really want to put some time into it, but like I'm at the point where I'm wondering if I want to quit. I don't know yet. It's really going to depend on, like, you know, the next few weeks and how they go, especially with all the codes we've been getting as of late, plus Spider-Man, which is my, you know, my most anticipated game. Is yeah, it's fun for what it is. It just with everything out right now, it's tough to really put to focus on it. But if you are looking for a fun hack and slash, this would be it. And that's all I got.
Okay. All right. So let's get to some news. First up here, Game Pass has some new stuff coming out here in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
A couple things that are already available. Now, let's see what they have here. Yeah, September 20th was Party Animals for console. So that's kind of one of those local little physics fighting game things. There's been a number of that kind of stuff of late. But this is the new one that Microsoft is getting behind, as I think they announced an Ori sort of a crossover with that, as they're putting some Ori costumes into there. So you can check that stuff out. Let's see. Also up there, Payday 3 for PC and Xbox Series X and S. So you can check out that sort of a co-op heist shooter kind of thing. I've heard the servers have not been great for the launch. So
not really.
So that's a fun thing to have there. For the week coming up here, Cocoon on console and PC Game Pass on September 29th, which I think is Friday. Yep. So you can check that out. That is from the team led by Jeppe Carlson, lead gameplay designer of Limbo and Inside. This looks like a fun little game for there. So, yeah, you can check that out. And then let's see, on October 3rd, you'll be able to check out Gotham Knights and see how that game is. PC, Xbox Series X and S. That's the follow-up to the Batman Arkham series, where Batman has been killed and his proteges have teamed up to protect Gotham and sort of figure out what happened and, you know, stop whoever's trying to take over Gotham. So that's a game I have on PC. It was okay. I didn't really play more than a couple hours into it. So, but there you go for that. Also October 3rd, the Lamplighters League, which is day one PC, Xbox Series X and S. That is a turn-based strategy game, sort of similar to like XCOM. But maybe more in the vein of like an Indiana Jones style of pulp action kind of stuff. So you get some cool like supernatural things, as well as, you know, people trying to get through tombs and that kind of stuff. So that could be neat. And yeah, that's pretty much it for what's coming up here in the next week or two. So there you go. Some cool stuff there for people to check out.
Yeah. Party Animals is one that I've had my interest on for a while, so I'll definitely try to check that out. And Gotham Knights, you know, a lot of people give it hell, but it was actually a pretty good game, and it's a good get for Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah. And let's get to Nintendo. Their subscription service, the expansion pack version, is getting a new Game Boy Advance game, Kirby and the Amazing Mirror. September 29th, so that'll be on Friday. That one's a pretty solid Kirby game. I don't think I put too much time into it, so I do not have a ton to say about it, but I think it's one of those. You have four Kirbys to play with, so kind of a little bit more chaos to it, but ways of getting through the world and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that looks neat. Yeah. You got anything to add, Dan Rip?
Other than Kirby and the Amazing Mirror is actually like a really, really good game. It's just interesting seeing how all in Nintendo has been to Kirby as of late. You know, Kirby and the Forgotten Land was like one of the best games on the Switch, and like almost every game is available on Switch now except for the GameCube games, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go for that. Let's see. We got some TGS news, a couple of dates here. Conveniently, both coming out around the same time. The Apollo Justice Ace Attorney Trilogy is coming to, let's see, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC on January 25th, 2024. That's the collection, essentially the first Apollo Justice and the two 3DS Phoenix Wright games, Dual Destinies and Spirit of Justice. Those three that kind of center around Apollo Justice through all that. So those are all going to be getting HD upgrades and all that. So that's neat. That'll be out here early next year. Is that wild time frame, like the last couple weeks of January and first couple weeks of February, is just a ton coming out then. That's that one. And then the next day, Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth will be releasing January 26th, 2024. If you're into the variety of Japanese games there, that's gonna be a tough couple days for that stuff. That'll be PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and PC for that. And yeah, they have pre-orders out now. Yeah, it's gonna continue what happened in Yakuza Like a Dragon with Ichiban and his new wacky adventures in Hawaii.
Yep, he is definitely in Honolulu.
Yeah.
That's true. Rough. Not only does it come out a day after Apollo Justice, it's also coming out like within a week of Persona 3 Reload, which is also coming out of Sega. And then there's the Grand Blue Fantasy Relink game that people are also really looking forward to. And yeah, a whole lot of Japanese goodness. I just don't know like how much of that is going to converge or not. I don't believe Apollo Justice is going to be in like that rough of a situation because it's a very different game than everything else being shown. But like everything else I talked about is a full-on JRPG. So it'll be interesting to see how those cannibalize each other and how it'll go there. But if anything, like, yeah, these are all games that I have on my radar and pretty excited about them. The weird thing though is I wouldn't even call the Apollo Justice trilogy the Apollo Justice trilogy because he's not the main character in all of them, but it's funny.
Yeah, it's just the way they're framing the last few games they haven't brought over yet for that stuff. So yeah, and even then we got a month later, there's Final Fantasy VII Rebirth at the end of February releasing on Leap Year Day. So there you go for that, for everybody that tries to keep up with the JRPGs out there for that stuff. But yeah, we got other things that got announced. There was an NIS America and Falcom stream last week where they also confirmed that the Cold Steel 3 and 4 are coming to PS5.
Yep.
Doubt they're going to have any sort of free upgrade like the Ease 8 and 9 games did not have either.
Yeah,
despite the upgrades being pretty minor for that, but they announced that they are bringing The Legend of Heroes Trails Through Daybreak to the PS5, PS4, Switch, and PC summer 2024 in the West, which is also known as Kuro no Kiseki in Japan. That came out 2 years ago.
Yeah. It's really all about time because or really really just about time because Kuro no Kiseki, as you mentioned, came out in Japan 2 years ago and they actually already have Kuro no Kiseki 2. So yeah. we're still behind as far as that goes, but I will say Trails Through Daybreak is a hell of a title that they thought of. I wondered what they would do, especially with Tales of Arise being a thing and like Tales and Trails already rhyming, so that's funny. But the trailer we saw was really, really interesting. I'm liking the voice acting for the main character. I don't know who's doing it, but it sounds great. And for those like unfamiliar with the series, this one pretty much starts off a new arc. So if you're somebody who's wanted to get into the series and didn't know where to start, this is actually one of those points. I wouldn't say it's fully recommended, but you're fully okay starting with this one. And the fact that it uses a totally different battle system. Well, not totally different. There are some similarities, but it uses a different battle system. So it will definitely feel like a new experience for both old and new players. So cool announcement. It's also coming out in summer, not January. So, there's some room to spare there.
Yeah. So yeah, that looks nice. They're going to have a $100 collector's edition that you can pre-order now.
Yep. And it's actually, and remember, this is the part of the series that actually takes place in the Republic. In Calvard. So,
yeah,
that's going to be fun to see.
Yeah, I'm seeing what it has in here. There's a mini art book. There's a digital soundtrack. Let's see. A 240-plus page regular art book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, physical soundtrack, one disc. Let's see. Steelbook case. A business card case. That's how you know it comes from a Japanese company. Let's see. Movie poster art cart set.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go for that. And yeah, an outer sleeve box for that. So $100 for that.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, there's plushies. $165 with plushies.
Mm.
Yeah. Which sort of saves you stuff because I think the plushies are actually $40 each. So
yeah. That looks like the two main protagonists, Spriggan and Agnes.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Mm.
You can spend more money if you want on that game, which is like every game now.
I did.
Let's see. We've got other news here. This comes out of the Xbox showcase, Like a Dragon. Gaiden, the man who erased his name, will be on Game Pass day one. When that's out in November, November 9th, they will also be getting Like a Dragon Isshin that came out earlier this year, sometime later this year. They didn't have a date for that one, conveniently. So yeah, a little bit surprised that they're announcing this like so late. It seems like something that should have been like a big part of their summer showcase.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess they were holding it back for TGS, probably more recent deal. But also seems like a big misstep to not have Isshin on Game Pass at launch than if they were doing this other deal. Maybe they just slipped on it and just did not get around to making a deal on that stuff. But yeah, if you have Game Pass on Xbox or PC, you'll be able to check out Like a Dragon Gaiden, which looks like it's going to be a very ridiculous game.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't think it was too long ago when Microsoft mentioned like sort of a renewed focus on Sega's titles. So that's probably why the announcement on Game Pass came so late. And I'm also interested in knowing like what kind of numbers Game Pass sees in Japan, because that's obviously a huge selling point here, but I'm wondering how it is overseas as well. But anyway, that being said, Like a Dragon, Gaiden, or The Man Who Erased His Name is definitely something I have on my radar. I played it in PAX, and then, like, the previews they showed during TGS were awesome. Like, I never actually finished, 3 through 6, so I don't really know much about what went on with Kiryu leading up to, like, a dragon. It's spoilery, but they mentioned that throughout the entire presentation. Like, apparently he has cancer, so I'm wondering how that, like, changes the gameplay up. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's neat. But let's get to our next story here. Ubisoft announced that they are officially working on Tom Clancy's The Division 3 with Massive Entertainment, who worked on the previous games as well as the upcoming Avatar Frontiers of Pandora. This is a bit of a weird thing because I believe they primarily announced it via a tweet, not like as part of a showcase or anything like that, that you would expect, a big-ish title like this to happen. But it seems like they are kind of announcing this as a part of, recruiting, as they mentioned that that Julian Garrity will be the executive producer for the entire Tom Clancy's The Division brand, who was sort of creative director, I believe, for the first two games. And you might have seen him. I think he's the guy that was at the E3 showcases wearing khaki shorts.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of the few people I ever saw doing that, so that's a noteworthy thing there. But yeah, he's going to be overseeing this project and sort of building the new team that's working on it at Massive Entertainment. So this is probably not going to be out for a while, at least a few years for that. But yeah, currently he's creative director of the Star Wars Outlaws game that's out next year.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is like the third Division game, I think, it's being worked on. There's the mobile game, there's the free-to-play game, and now there's the Division 3 that's being worked on. So they got a lot of those games in the works, and not much concrete about them at the moment.
Yeah.
Still waiting on the Resurgence, which I think people have been able to check out at some events for that, but that's about as much as we've seen. And then, yeah, there's the Division Heartland, which is the free-to-play survival action shooter. So curious to see more of that stuff at some point. But yeah, let's get back to some more TGS news. Another thing that got announced might have been at the Xbox Showcase. A new game coming from Swery and Suda51 teaming together called Hotel Barcelona. Like, I saw a little bit about the history of this game that they they met at an event called Travis Monday Nitro 2 in Shibuya in Tokyo, October 2019. They discussed creating a game together and came up with the name Hotel Barcelona first, and then figured out what the hell the game was going to be later that year while they were together in Canada. And so,
yeah,
it's kind of a horror-themed side-scrolling action game. Where you are essentially, let me see if it's described better here, like a 2.5D slasher film parodic action game. So kind of that this Hotel Barcelona is where a bunch of serial killers happen to congregate and you come in to try to kill them all, I guess. I don't know if it's Metroid-ish or not, but seems like a really neat premise for a thing, and yeah, it's going to be out next year, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC for that. So those two guys have a very specific kind of style that they work in, and that seems like it's going to work pretty well for this kind of game. So yeah, that's one you can keep an eye on for next year at some point. So yeah, there you go.
All right.
Yeah, next up, the Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 1 is coming out in... when the hell is that coming out? It's like, I think November? October? I forget. There's not even a date listed here, I don't think. But yeah, it's close enough that they sort of put out a graphic of, here's what the resolutions these games run at and the frame rates and all that. And very much seems to confirm something people were kind of expecting, that Metal Gear Solid is going to run at 30 FPS on every platform. So that seems to suggest that it's probably a thing where a lot of physics and other mechanics are tied to the frame rate. And they probably did not want to put in the effort to like rebuild that game to work better at 60 FPS, I guess, despite this being called, you know, the Master Collection. And you have Switch in handheld mode runs this at 720p. The weird thing goes with Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3, where it runs at 1080p, 60 FPS on every other platform, but the Switch, where it runs at 30 FPS, both in handheld and TV mode, which is, again, those are games that were on the PS2. Metal Gear Solid is 22 years old. A Switch could probably handle it at 60 FPS. But apparently not for whatever budget and time frame was given for this game, for this collection here. So it seems like the Switch is the odd platform out, though. Yeah, you kind of also have to wonder, like, well, this seems like this would have been a good time to, you know, work on a 4K version for this, but the studio that did that original HD collection was is now owned by PlayStation, Blue Point Studios. So very much they didn't seem to want to hire them again for this, to pull their magic to work on making it even better. But it seems like they put a lot of their time into all that extra content, having the NES and MSX games, and having all the side stuff, those visual novel, you know, stuff from the PSP, and a lot of side stuff that you can unlock as well. So yeah, it kind of tampers a little bit of the excitement for this collection, but still seems like it's going to be a pretty solid collection for those games. So,
yeah, I mean, obviously to each their own. Maybe it is unfortunate to see this. I personally don't, especially since the game originally ran 30 FPS. And just because it's on a new platform doesn't mean that I would just expect it to be any better. And yeah, like the Switch is the odd man out. And I don't know if I really care about the games from the PS2 or PS1 era all that high in frame rate, especially if there wasn't any real improvements done.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go. You'll be able to check that out here later this year. So there you go. Let's see. Yeah, let's get to some Unity news. First up, the biggest response to the original Unity news came from Relogic, the developers of Terraria, who announced in a big tweet message that they aren't really affected by the Unity news because they don't really use it for much of anything, but do sympathize with all the developers that do and have to deal with all the potential fallout of these decisions. And so, yeah, they say here, we do not feel that a simple public statement is sufficient. Even if Unity were to recant their policies and statements, the destruction of trust is not so easily repaired. Strongly feel that it is now equally important to get behind some of the other up-and-coming open-source game engines, lighting some candles in an otherwise dark moment.
Mm-hmm.
To that end, we are donating $100,000 each to each of the open-source engines listed below, which is Godot, Game Engine, and FNA. Additionally, we are sponsoring each of these projects with $1,000 per month, each moving forward. All we ask in return is that they remain good people and keep doing all that they can to make these engines powerful and approachable for developers everywhere. And it's like, oh, damn, this is a really good way of making a statement here. That's, putting major support for these smaller engines that are, getting a lot more attention now that Unity has decided, that they don't really care about, making good decisions for their community of developers. And so, yeah, this is a good way to kind of put a spotlight on these other engines for studios to maybe look into seeing if it works for them or not. And so, yeah, that's really cool Relogic to do that. And then let's see here, Friday afternoon, I think it was, Unity put out a big open letter on their site, basically called Open Letter on Runtime Fee, where they apologized for the controversial changes they announced 2 weeks ago almost, and announced that it was walking back some of the worst changes, but it seems like they still have plenty of parts of this that reasonable developers are, very much skeptical about. But let's see, the new changes. They confirmed its personal plan will remain free, also said that it now has no plans to charge the controversial runtime fee on games built with Unity Personal. It's increasing how much revenue devs can make on games with this free version of the engine, which was $100,000 before, now is $200,000. They also said Unity is removing the requirement to have a Made with Unity splash screen appear when players boot up the game. They also say no game with less than $1 million in trailing 12-month revenue will be subject to the runtime fee. So that's pretty good news for a lot of smaller devs out there. Next, the letter announces that the fee will only apply to software developed using the LTS version of Unity, which ships in 2024. I believe LTS is long-term service or long-term support. It's essentially like a stable version of Unity that they basically only update to fix bugs and not make any major changes to it. They also promise that, your games that are currently shipped and the projects you're currently working on will not be included unless you choose to upgrade them to this new version of Unity. Unity also promises that developers will be able to stay on the terms that apply to their version of the Unity engine as long as devs don't upgrade. So some good stuff there. But yeah, the runtime fees are not going away. So as you could surmise, games that make $1 million or more will be subject to the runtime fee, though they are giving devs the choice of either a 2.5% revenue share or the calculated amount based on the number of new people engaging with your game each month. That's the runtime fee on that second part. They say both these numbers are self-reported from data developers already have access to, and NetStudios will always be billed for the lesser amount. So that sort of thing. And still having that whole based on the number of new people engaging with your game each month that's self-reported from the Unity engine, that developers are skeptical about how that is calculated and all that. And I think the big FAQ they posted with update stuff still has plenty of questions that people have on how you can verify, these are, new things to be charged for and all that. But at least some of the response for this is still, it's like, well, it's better, but, they've also shown that they are willing to, make big changes without really any conversations with the people actually working on the engine to see if that's a good idea or not. And so a lot of devs do not have trust in them and will probably still, continue to look to other engines when they work on their next project. That kind of stuff. So, yeah, still a lot of things here for developers to be concerned about. But yeah, this still seems like it's a minor band-aid on an issue that is now one of trust, that they are not going to go back on anything they do here. So yeah, seems like it now changes Unity to be a better for the small devs. But indie devs that are of a certain size now have to decide if this is any better for their business or not, and if they should look into other places. So maybe move over to Godot or Unreal or any number of other engines, or maybe even work on their own if they are technically capable enough to do that stuff. So there you go. There's your Unity update for this week. Hopefully it's the last bad thing we hear for a while.
Thank God. Hope.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't have much to say over the issue that hasn't already been said. I guess the thing that really makes me laugh is the fact that they thought they could get away with this. I mean, it's one thing to expect, consumers and gamers to throw a tizzy, but, when it's developers too, different story. And, I know that they've, they're making efforts, or not, they're not really making efforts. They're pretty much showing that they're going to, not do it. But at the end of the day, trust has been lost here. They tried to get everybody once, and there's no telling when they'll try.
Yeah. They expected people to be angry for a day or so and then move on and forget. And you can't really do that when it's developers who are, closely monitoring their financial details and having somebody say every new game that gets installed, whether it's a legit purchase or a pirated version or comes from, charity bundles or comes from Game Pass or PlayStation Plus, you're going to have to pay extra money just for people starting up those games because we want money. And yeah, people were like, no, you guys need to go fuck off. And seems like they're trying to minimize how many people we'll go fuck off to other engines.
Yeah, not to mention with the bigger publishers, we're seeing a lot of them do their own in-house engines. And while we've seen a lot of struggles, a lot of them are also really good. So, it's not something you really want to do.
Yeah. But yeah, that's your Unity talk for the week. Next up here, start of the Microsoft block of acquisition news. The big one, that the UK's Competition and Markets Authority, a regulatory agency, has approved the Microsoft acquisition of Activision Blizzard. Let's see. Yeah, so they have preliminary approval on this. So that seems like they're basically like, Yeah, it's pretty good. We're going to double check some things, but that seems how they're going to finalize it here in the next couple of weeks to make sure everything's on the up and up on that stuff that that Microsoft has promised to do. So that seems like that's largely going to be it. Things should go through pretty soonish.
Mm-hmm.
Though the last like little hurdle is the appeal in this FTC case here in the U.S. Because that's led to a whole weird situation where it seems like somebody at Microsoft uploaded the files of all these documents to the wrong server or something like that. It seems like because it went up on a public facing FTC or peer to peer server kind of thing that people started downloading and looking at and being like, shit, there's a lot of details here that probably should have been redacted. And it got, addressed within the next day or so, but obviously well too late before a bunch of people have downloaded and start pouring through these documents with a bunch of interesting information in here, particularly some of the big stuff here. There's mention of an Xbox Series X refresh, codenamed Brooklyn. Brooklyn with a I after the L instead of the normal way it's spelled. That is sort of a new version of the Xbox Series X. So if you know how that thing looks, it's basically a big box, square, rectangular box thing. Looks like they turned this into like a smokestack, a round cylindrical thing for the design with, I think, a USB-C port here below the Xbox button on there, but also no disk drive on it. As they are planning, at least for what this version is, the 2 terabyte internal storage, so you can store more games internally. USB-C front ports with power delivery for, charging controllers and, USB-C hard drives, external drives, that kind of stuff. Yeah, the new controller we'll talk about in a sec, be priced at $499 like it currently is. Let's see. Yeah, they have updated some of the internal stuff. Nothing really major here. Just an updated, Wi-Fi radio to make the Wi-Fi better. Let's see, better. Yeah, upgraded Bluetooth radio for making the controller stuff run a little bit better. Yeah, and shrunk some of the internal stuff to make it a little more cheap and power efficient, hopefully. And let's see, new low power standby mode, 20% of current Xbox Series S standby mode. Increased use of PCR on housing to 30%, over 30%. Like it's a new plastic, recycled plastic kind of stuff. So some neat stuff there. But kind of shows an interesting wrinkle of, how this is going to be digital focused.
Yeah.
No more, assuming it replaces the current Xbox Series X, they would have no disc.
The mini fridge, in other words.
Yeah. They'd have no disc console that you could put your discs into, which, for people that like their backwards compatibility, that's a big red flag for them. Because, there's plenty of those backwards compatible games that are not on digital, that are physical only. So that's definitely a concern for people, as well as, for people that like to buy physical games when they can versus going digital, which, if you're in that camp, buy a Series X now. Don't let Microsoft do, release this and like make it harder for you to get the physical console. That kind of stuff. But the new controller, codename Sebile, S-E-B-I-L-E, has an interesting look to it. The one they have here is like a two-toned, where it's sort of black around the bottom and the handles, and white around where all the buttons are at. This looks like it would be a $70 controller that has Xbox Wireless 2, direct to cloud, so I guess better support for playing cloud games, I guess. Bluetooth 5.2, seamless pairing switch to, I guess, sync with phones for that kind of stuff. But some of the new stuff, you get precision haptic feedback, so it would have, you know, haptic rumble in there. VCA haptics, double S speakers. It's a voice coil activators. I forget what the full thing is, but PS5 kind of has this a bit where people have, devs have used the rumble in such a way to act as some sort of speaker system, or additional speaker, you know, audio stuff that you could do with that. So this would be in lieu of having, you know, actual speakers like the PS5 does on their controller. It would have an accelerometer, which I think is more for their approachability section they mentioned here, a lift to wake. So you would be able to have the controller turn off and then potentially turn on when you're pick it up kind of stuff. No gyro, as far as I can see, mentioned here. So people wanting gyro in the Xbox controller still have to wait unless there's some additional details. Again, this stuff is planned things at as of a certain point, probably within the past couple of years. But they may have changed details and plans for this stuff since then. So yeah, that's the controller looks pretty good. I don't know if I like this two-tone design, at least the way it's looking here. But yeah, the haptic rumble would be pretty good. I would prefer they have gyro in there as well. Also mentions quieter buttons and thumbsticks. There's one thing that's really annoying about Xbox controllers since the Xbox One launch is that they are very loud. If I have my Xbox, yeah, here it is. Really loud, clicky D-pads and it's very annoying when everything else is pretty quiet for the most part. And it's like, all right, that's good. It's not $70 worth of, you know, improvements, but you know, it's an interesting improvements. Not having the gyro is just definitely an annoyance, because it would have been nice to have gyro on all three main controllers and kind of unify that stuff and get third parties to support that stuff more than they already do. So, yeah, that would be some big deals there. So, yeah, there you go. Some potential improved controllers and Xbox Series X stuff in these plans. They also mention the potential next generation Xbox. With the tentative date when they started looking into this in 2028. No real concrete details, and like there are a bunch of, you know, pie in the sky stuff for this, for what they plan here, but they mention things like cloud as a way to merge, you know, the cloud stuff they've been trying to do with local stuff. So an ARM processor is also in there as well. So you kind of get some of that kind of stuff in there. So, yeah, but not really too much in the way of concrete details out of that. So, yeah, that's like all the hardware stuff. Let's see. There's some other things. There's a Bethesda roadmap of releases potentially that is neat to look at. But yeah, obviously this is, I think it's a pre-Microsoft acquisition roadmap of sorts, because it mentions, you know, a game like Project Hibiki, which is Hi-Fi Rush, has a 2021 release. I think Starfield's also listed as 2021. So the dates aren't really the thing here you should take as like concrete about this. Probably the projects that are mentioned here. Things like the, you know, they mentioned the Indiana Jones game, some Starfield DLC, stuff like that that we know is concrete. But they also mention a remaster of Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion for work in the future. There's also a Fallout 3 remaster. So that's not too surprising. That's a game that they would probably like to make you know, better.
Yeah.
And look better and all that. Yeah, there's a project called Doom Year Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Which, who knows what that is? If that's it's like a
Doom related. Yeah.
Yeah. If it's like a new Doom game or if it's like some retro thing, anything like that. So there's codename projects Kestrel and Platinum, which who knows what that is. Elder Scrolls 6 is on there as well. So you got that. Dishonored 3, a Ghostwire Tokyo sequel, which I could see not happening based on how Ghostwire Tokyo went. But, you know, these, that seems like safe thing to put on a roadmap. Like, yeah, if this goes well, we'll do that. Because they hadn't released when they put this thing out. So they're very much like one of those things of like, this could be a franchise for us. Much like, you know, Dishonored was. That kind of stuff. So there's some of that. So that kind of spoils some things, though. Like the Oblivion remaster was something that had been kind of rumored for a little bit. But let's see what else we have here. Oh, yeah, there's some Game Pass stuff in here that featured essentially like their own internal estimates of chances of getting a bunch of big games on Game Pass day one and sort of cost associated with that. A lot of the big stuff you've probably seen mentioned like Star Wars Jedi Survivor and that being estimated to be like $300 million, which makes sense for, you know, getting a big game like that day one. You would have to subsidize a lot of the developer cost of making that game to justify losing a lot of potential sales for that. And, you know, they mentioned Mortal Kombat 1 for $250 million, Suicide Squad for $250 million, that kind of stuff, which they mentioned, you know, for some of this, you know, like publishers' willingness to do deals, that kind of stuff. And yeah, with like Suicide Squad, it's very much like this was done like around the time that WB was acquired by Discovery. So they're very much like with WB, you know, this might have been a potential deal, but with Discovery, we'll have to reevaluate that kind of stuff. But yeah, then you get to, you know, Lego Star Wars, $35
million,
Dynamite 2, $50 million, and some of the stuff that did happen, like City Skylines 2. They don't really have a date on, or a price on there, just like a, a lot of it's just generally like, you know, potential audience they can bring in, which for that is definitely something that's a little bit more unique than the average game that's on here. The thing that like broke people's minds is Baldur's Gate 3 getting mentioned on there for $5 million, which again, this was a few years ago. And Baldur's Gate 3 wasn't necessarily thought to be as potentially big of a release as it was then. Especially because I think the little note on it was second run Stadia RPG, PC RPG, which is like, yeah, they had a deal with Stadia for a while there. And then Stadia ceased to exist. So that deal went kaput on that. Now it's, you know, a game selling pretty well now. And getting you know, a lot of attention, especially as Microsoft has to relax some of their requirements for making that game on Series S to get it on there, that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's some interesting stuff here. Games they look at and they, you know, take a look at a lot of this stuff for that. So yeah, that's something you can check out there for some extra interesting behind the scenes tidbits. So. Let's see. Yeah, there's the email where a Microsoft marketing guy, not part of the Xbox group, was like asking Phil and some of the other gaming people, like, you know, it would be really cool if we could get Nintendo, if you could buy them. And that's a whole thing where he mentions like one of their core investor groups has also been buying some stock in Nintendo, which, you know, they're free to do and being like, oh, we might have an inroad there, or that kind of stuff. But also mentioning, you know, calling Nintendo is the prime asset for us in gaming. It's like, yeah, if Xbox wanted a way to further cement themselves as a big part of the gaming industry, Nintendo would be a purchase to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously Nintendo has a lot of caveats. You know, the Yamauchi family owns the controlling interest in that company. Mm-hmm. So you would essentially have to be cutting them a real huge check to buy them out, essentially, as well as a bunch of other stuff that would be going on with that. So, yeah, this is a thing people are getting, like, weird and angry about. And it's like, I mean, if any company had the opportunity and the funds available to buy Nintendo, they would be stupid not to.
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of acquisition. But Nintendo's not in that position to be available in any way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, not to mention it was a few years ago, but, like, the funny thing here is, Microsoft was in the news about this like 2 years ago during the time when they had that that documentary go out when they were first starting, trying to, you know, go to Nintendo's office and buy them there. And I'm like, did the person who sent that email know that? Because like we've already had this discussion. It's not going to happen, especially anytime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hilarious, considering like Nintendo is as good as they've ever been right
now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very much this guy is like a marketing, chief marketing officer and executive vice president that, you know, they're not thinking about that kind of stuff. They may not even know that kind of history. They're just like,
mm-hmm.
man, this would be a really nice thing, you know, a get for us. And it's like, yeah, it would. It's not going to happen. Like mm-hmm. Phil's response is very much like, you know, I don't think a hostile action would be a good move, so we are playing the long game. Mm-hmm. But our board of directors has seen the full write-up on Nintendo and Valve, is also mentioned there. Yeah. And they are fully supportive on either if opportunity arises, as am I.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like, yeah, no duh. Any company worth their salt would love to buy a Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
But Phil's there to be like, yeah, but that's probably not going to happen anytime soon unless something real weird happens. Yeah, even describes it as like at some point getting Nintendo would be a career moment. It's just taken a long time for Nintendo to see that their future exists off of their own hardware. Mm-hmm. A long time, ... And does the emoji smiley face with the dash for a nose. So if you need to know if he is a good person or an evil person, he puts his noses in the smiley faces.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's squarely in the evil side.
Yeah. Not to mention, like, if a move like that were actually in the books, it would require a whole lot of, like, legal tampering because it's actually illegal for a foreign company to own a Japanese company.
Yep. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there you go. That's probably one of the things that broke out most amongst these documents. But yeah, then people started looking into, like, who did this? Because obviously the weirdo fanboys were like, obviously the FTC leaked this to get back at Microsoft. And it's like, no, they wouldn't do that shit. And yeah, they essentially seems to be that Microsoft probably accidentally sent in the wrong documents as far as redaction and that kind of stuff. Douglas Farrar, director of its Office of Public Affairs, said the FTC was not response for uploading Microsoft's plans for its games and consoles to the court website. He shared a new court order released by the judge in the case. It called for both the FTC and Microsoft to meet again to go over the issues with exhibits. Place the blame squarely on the latter for the latest leak.
Mm-hmm.
The court ordered the parties to meet and confer and provide the court with a secure cloud link to the admitted exhibits with the redaction set forth in the court's orders. Microsoft provided the leak on September 14th. Mm-hmm. And the court uploaded the exhibits to the internet page established for this case. Essentially, like somebody messed up and either didn't apply the redactions properly or uploaded the unredacted version.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely a whole thing there. And also, Phil Spencer had to say something. And he very much said the weird corporate thing. Mm-hmm. Tweeting here, we've seen a conversation around old emails and documents. It is hard to see our team's work shared in this way because so much has changed and there's so much to be excited about right now. Mm-hmm. And in the future, we will share the real plans when we are ready. And it's like, okay, you can sit here and be like, oh, these aren't the real plans. Mm-hmm. So don't worry about that. And then obviously an in-depth memo sent out to Xbox employees got leaked, and so he mentions a lot of the same kind of stuff here. Today, several documents submitted in the court proceedings related to our proposed acquisition of Activision Blizzard were unintentionally disclosed. I know this is disappointing, even if many of the documents are well over a year old and our plans have evolved. I also know we all take the confidentiality of our plans and our partners' information very seriously. This leak obviously is not us living up to that expectation. We learn from what happened and be better off going forward. We all put incredible amounts of passion and energy into our work, and this is never how we want that hard work to be shared with the community. That said, there's so much more to be excited about, and when we're ready, we'll share the real plans with our players. In closing, I appreciate all the work that you pour into Team Xbox to surprise and delight our players. In the days and weeks ahead, let's stay focused on what we can control, continuing the amazing success of Starfield and the upcoming launch of the incredible and accessible Forza Motorsport, continuing to build game services and devs that millions of players can enjoy. Phil. And it's like, you can tell that he definitely knew this was going to leak out as well, because he very much fills that with a lot of corporate marketing speak. It's very much like, you could have said this in like two sentences, but you spread it out so you can make sure you mention that, you know, Forza Motorsport, that that's coming out soon. And, you know, how well Starfield's done, all that kind of shit. Where it's like, yep, this is that kind of corporate speak that's can be really annoying to see as somebody who does not like it. How much fluff there is in that kind of stuff. So, yeah, there you go. Phil says to wait for when they have the right time and place to share the real plans. And people definitely take that and compare it to these documents and see what changed since then. So, there you go. That's kind of all the Xbox Microsoft leaks. Relating to this FTC case, to kind of give you a heads up, there's probably going to be a new Xbox Series X refresh. Whether it's, you know, they have no disc slot in there, or maybe like the rumored Sony stuff, or they'll have like an, you know, external one you can connect to it in some way. That'll happen probably some sort of new Xbox controller with some haptic feedback in there and some other stuff. Will be neat to see, and yeah, some nice stuff there. So yeah, there you go. For the Xbox leaks, and yeah, that's gonna do it for the show. A lot of stuff happened here last show of the month. Yeah, we'll be back next week with some new news and stuff to talk about. Hopefully more good stuff than bad. Maybe Unity can shut up for a week and not do anything bad. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers that, you know, also will not work on games on Unity anymore. But yeah, thank you to Brandon Danner for joining this week. We'll be back next week with a new slate of news to talk about. And we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.